Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's good to see each and every one of you. So glad to be here again, and this time I was able to bring Kim along. She agreed to come along, and she has a good friend, BJ, here with us, and her husband, Jerry. Jerry used to be the fire chief here in Morehead City. He is, as Troy likes to say, he is retired, just like I am. Yeah, oh, it's so good to be here. Really enjoyed Ray's class this morning, and it's always a pleasure to get to renew my acquaintances, friendships, and just see everyone. Really, really, really good to see you. Most of my Sunday mornings in New Bern, Kim will tell you, and everybody at Croatan will tell you, I tend to go and eat breakfast with my son, Josh. That was a tradition, and we generally end up somewhere about Bojangles. And I was at Bojangles one Sunday morning, and one of my old high school buddies was there. And I get this from time to time, maybe you do as well, especially if you do any preaching or speaking. I've invited this fella several times to come and go to church with us, you know. And he said he would, and he hasn't yet. Keep hoping that maybe he will, but he says, he told me this time, he said, you know what, he says, I just thought I'd say this to you. He said, when my time does come, I hope maybe you can come up with a few good words to say about me. I've heard that a lot, haven't you? Could you come up with a few good words to say about me? This morning I want to talk to you about just that, testimony. And testimony is not just, not limited to, what people might say about us. I want to talk about it in a kind of a three-pronged way, if you will. And the first thing I want to talk about is the testimony that we give regarding ourselves. And so, notice here, I'm going to give you a passage of Scripture from Nehemiah. Nehemiah was the governor of Jerusalem. He supervised the rebuilding of the walls around Jerusalem. Y'all are studying Bible history, Old Testament history right now. When the captives returned, and they were there, and Nehemiah was over in Persia. He was a cupbearer of the king at the time. And he asked, he inquired about what was going on in his hometown, Jerusalem. And they were just told, well, it's burned down, it's destroyed, and it's, you know, it's in rubbish, it's in rubble, needs a lot of help. And Nehemiah took the initiative to ask the king, the Persian king, to allow him to go home and to rebuild the walls around the city so that it would no longer be a vulnerable and unprotected place. He did just that. In fact, it happened in 52 days, and you know the story. But here's an example of someone who gives testimony about themselves. Nehemiah writes this beginning in verse 14, and I have it up there before you. Nehemiah says, moreover, from the day that I was appointed to be governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year of the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, for 12 years, neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance. Nehemiah is saying, hey, I want you to take notice here that there's something, I was entitled to much more. I could have taken more. The governor's allowance allowed me to do that, but I didn't. And I also applied myself to the work on this wall. We didn't buy any land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. Moreover, there was at my table 150 Jews and officials besides those who came to us from the nations around us. Now that which was prepared for us each day was, and then he gives inventory of how many sheep and how many goats and how many bulls and all that and the drinks. And then finally he wraps it up by saying, yes, for all this, I did not demand the governor's food allowance. Why? Because the servitude. We're talking about a paradox here, an irony. We just talked about Rehoboam. You think that it was tough under my father Solomon. You just wait until I become king. I'm really going to put a burden on you. Nehemiah is just the opposite. He said, I didn't take this allowance. And the reason I didn't take this allowance because the servitude was heavy on this people. They were burdened enough. And then Nehemiah says, "Remember me, O my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people." And so this is a personal, self-reflecting testimony. And I want us to understand there are things that we say about ourselves. We'll talk more about it in a moment. The second prong of this is what others say about us. In Acts chapter 24, the Jews actually, you know, they have it in for Saul of Tarsus because Saul was one of them. Saul was educated in the city of Jerusalem. He was a good and devout Jew, and he persecuted Christians until he met Jesus on the way to Damascus. And he turned it completely around, and he began preaching the very faith that he was seeking to destroy, right? Well, the Jews in Acts chapter 24 hire an attorney by the name of Tertullus. And Tertullus gets up before the dignitaries at that time, and he's there to prosecute Paul. And this is what he has to say about Paul. "For we found this man a real pest, a fellow who stirs up dissension among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. He even tried to desecrate the temple. And the Jews also joined the attack," Luke writes, "asserting that these things were so." So first of all, there's what we say about ourselves. You know, you can be really good at this, especially if you're a politician. "I did this, and I did this, and I did the other," right? And then there's that which others say about us, right? And that's, we can't help that. And I'll tell you, in this case, you know the rest of the story. You know the story. You know that what they're saying about Paul at this time, what this guy is saying, he's a hired gun, if you will. It's not true. But he still is saying it. He's still spreading these false rumors about the apostle of Jesus Christ, Paul. But finally, the third and final prong is there's what God says about us. You talking about that? There's what you say about yourself. There is what others say about you. And then finally, this is the real thing. There's what God says about us. This really is what Ray's class was all about this morning. As we read about all of these kings, and it is true, all of the kings after the division of the two kingdoms, when the kingdom divides into the northern and southern kingdoms, Israel and Judah, and we have that long inventorying of the kings, if you will, as Ray says, there were some good, and there were some that were evil. And God is telling us this. This is God's summary of their lives. He tells us maybe the good things that they did. But of those kings of Israel, and as Ray pointed out, Ahab, the husband of Jezebel, he was the worst of all. And God makes that pretty. There's what God says about us. And for this, I want you to read along with me in Job. This is God having a conversation with Satan. And this is what God says about this particular individual, Job. He says to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there's no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." It says no to all of the offers to do bad things. "And he still holds fast his integrity." Context, like Ray said, is everything. You know, it just happened to him. He just lost his family. And he's now lost his health, right? He's lost his family. He's lost his farms, his cows, all of that. "He still holds fast his integrity, although you, Satan, incited me against him to ruin him without cause." These three things: what you say about yourself, what others say about you, and then finally, the most important thing we'll talk about this morning is that which God says about us. So, what are we saying about ourselves? What is it that you say about yourself? What do I, Craig Hearn, say about myself? I want to suggest to you this morning that what we say about ourselves is called presentation. Presentation. I remember when I went off to college, I had waited a year. I decided I was never going to school after I graduated in 1978. You're taking this all in, young man Edwards back there. I decided I was never going to go to school. I was just going to lay low and get myself a job, and I did. I was working at a tire store, and eventually I decided that after working 60-hour weeks and 70-hour weeks, and man, I was the mechanic. I was the salesman. I got the title of credit manager, and my boss says, "Yeah, I want you to call these people and tell them that they owe you money." I said, "But they don't owe me money." He said, "But don't put it on me. I own this place. I don't want them to feel bad about me. Tell them that you guys owe me money." And anyway, there's a lot of responsibility for an 18-year-old guy. And, I decided I'm going to school after a year of that. And my pawpaw, no one in my house had ever gone to college. My parents hadn't gone to college. But my pawpaw had told me when I was a little boy, if you ever go to school, go to Florida College. And I thought, okay. Now, Pawpaw went to the third grade. And he's advising me, and I'm taking, and Pawpaw was the man. And Pawpaw advised me to go to college, to go to Florida College. And so I decided I'd go to Florida College. All the way, never ridden an airplane before, and there I went. Yep. That summer, I cut grass and surfed. And that was it. I grew up right here, y'all. And the church at Moorhead City at that time saw a lot of me, and especially in Swansboro, because that was the church that was closest to the beach and the waves and all that. And when I went to Florida College, guys, I had a presentation to uphold. I had to make sure that everybody knew that I was a surfer. And I had three outfits, and I put them all in one suitcase, but I had these. I had gone to Atlantic Beach Surf Shop and Marsh is over here, and I had bought me a pair of corduroys and these what I thought were surfer shoes and all these flowered shirts. My wife was at school at that time, and we didn't get married until many years later. But she even tells me, "Yeah, you were that guy that we thought was from California." So I don't know what kind of presentation I was actually making. But everybody makes a presentation. I tell you what, one thing you know about Aubrey Spence, he's a Jeepster. He loves the Jeep, right? And the things that we put on our cars, the bumper stickers and all that stuff, you know, we present ourselves in such a way. Everybody makes a presentation. Kim Schultz back home, one of the sisters there, dear friends of ours, she says, and she hires a lot of people, says, presentation is everything. What are we saying about ourselves through presentation? You're going to think I picked this sermon so I could tell this story. Actually, I thought of this story that I really need to tell this story as I make this point. Because this was when I was 30 years old. 30 years ago? 34 years ago? Or somewhere around there. And it was my birthday. And Jay and Carol called Kim and I, and Tim at the time, and said, "It's Craig's birthday. We're taking y'all to see Jerry Clower." Now, a lot of you young people said, "Who?" Celebrity. Big time. From the world and the culture of country music. He was a comedian, and he told stories. And I can remember sitting, and when we only had an AM radio in my dad's Dodge, and coming when we took a few trips a year, and Jerry Clower would come on, it was shh. And my dad would just laugh his sides out. "Jerry, I'm going to see Jerry Clower." And I found out that there were all these kids at Florida College who knew Jerry Clower. You know, and so I loved his coon hunting story. "I'm going to see Jerry Clower, who is coming to the Craven County Fair in New Bern." Yeah. Oh, it's special. Well, I've known Jay and Carol enough by now, and especially Jay. I'm always thinking, honey, what do you reckon Jay's going to wear? Because Jay has a dress for it. There's a presentation there, right? Well, Jay's been down in Texas getting his bride, and he's got a nice brand new pair of cowboy boots. And his ironed, creases on his dungarees with a W on the back. That stands for Wrangler, y'all. And a real nice Western shirt. And a Stetson cowboy hat. Yeah. And I look up at him like, wow. He's ready for Jerry Clower. We hear him tell his jokes, and then we got to meet him in person. You know, we're in line, and Jay's sizing him up. Jerry Clower's got on his red polyester suit, and it is somewhat under some stress. It's stretched out a little bit. But we're sitting there waiting to meet Jerry Clower, and Jay's going to buy a tape and have him sign it. And Jay has a spiel and all this, and you know, you have to understand this. The Craven County Fair was not just where you went and rode the Ferris wheel or the merry-go-round. It was also a place, it was a livestock place. It was where all of the folks brought their cows and their pigs, and they showed them at the fair. And some of them won prizes for, you know, showing their animals. And these were the people that got Jerry Clower to come there, because that was his history, right? And his expertise. And so Jay is waiting to talk to Jerry Clower, and he's looking at him, and Jerry Clower looks up at Jay and looks him up and down, and he says, "So, how many hogs are you showing?" Which meant that Jay's presentation was such that he was a pig farmer. Which got the best of Jay, and for the first time in my life, Jay just was speechless. That's presentation. It is, whether you like it or not, each and every one of us makes a presentation. We're saying something about ourselves. As a school teacher, I look at the kids. I look at the way that they introduce themselves, what they say literally, verbally about themselves. But I also see the way they dress. And they're making a presentation to their peers. They're making a presentation to their teachers. And I, as a teenager, and I have to tell you, and even this morning as I stand before you, I also am making a presentation of myself. Are you aware of that? This lesson makes me aware of the fact that I'm making a presentation. And sometimes my wife tells me, "You know you're going out in public. You know that, right?" And she gave me a haircut yesterday, and I trimmed my beard and all that. But here's the thing. Not everything that we say about ourselves or that we project to others about ourselves in the way that we dress or the way that we speak or even what we post on social media, you know that, right? You know that not all of that stuff is true. It is just that. It is a presentation of what we want others to think about us. Jesus really hit the Pharisees right between the eyes, right? Because they presented well. On the outside, Jesus said in Matthew 23, "You're what? You're whitewashed sepulchres. You're beautiful tombstones, if there is such a thing. But on the inside, you are full of dead men's bones." And so there's one thing about presentation and what we say about ourselves to others, but then there's the actual truth about ourselves. A lot of times what we present is a facade of who we actually are and what we're really up to and what it is that we're thinking. And so as important as presentation is, and I don't want to undermine presentation, because we are instructed and encouraged and commanded to present ourselves as servants, as we sang this morning, right? As we sang this morning, Jeffrey, "Let me be a servant," or whatever the song was about the servant there. We present ourselves as servants to God. So presentation is important, but presentation is not always accurate. It is not always true. Secondly, I guess I forgot all of those. Then there's what others are saying about us. For example, in Matthew chapter 16, remember the conversation that took place? Jesus asked the disciples in Matthew 16, 13, as Peter's about to say, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." But Jesus is curious and asks them, "What is it that others are saying about me?" And they said, "Well, some say that you're Elijah or John the Baptist, or that you're maybe one of the prophets." And then Jesus said, "But what do you say about me?" And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Made that confession about Jesus. And Jesus would go on to say, "And you're Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it." But this second point, what other people are saying about us, this is what I like to call reputation. So first of all, you've got what it is that you present about yourself. That's how you project yourself to others. Presentation. But what others say about us, well, that's your reputation. And I want to warn you again that what others are saying about us is not always true, any more than what the prosecutor was saying about the Apostle Paul, that he was nothing more than a pest and a ringleader of a particular sect of the Jews, and all the damage that he was doing all over. And I tell you, people that know you, well, they're saying things about you too. It's what they think. And it's based upon what they've heard you say. It's based upon what they've seen you actually do. And that is, like it or not, your reputation. As a school teacher, I am asked every year to write these college letters. "I want to go, Senor Hearn, I want to go to this college. Would you write a recommendation for me, please, to go to this school?" And I say, "Sure, I'll write you a recommendation." And I try to make it truthful, but at the same time, I try to make a presentation of, you know, "Dear College Board, don't just look at this student's grades, but think of his potential. This guy's got potential." You know, and I really try to make it as positive as I possibly can, but what other people are saying about you, that's what we call reputation. It's built upon what people have heard us say, their observation of us throughout our lives, and we just all have reputations. David, that you all spoke about this morning. Yes, he was the individual in the Bible that is spoken of by God as a man who was pursuing God's heart. He was following the heart of God. And yet, what else do we know about him? What could he never escape? The fact that he had Uriah the Hittite murdered. And before that, he had committed adultery with Bathsheba. And so there's this reputation. And I really love that about the Bible. I'm so glad that it was written before I came along, and that I'm not one of the characters. Because God puts it all in there, good, bad, and ugly. Every bit of it is in there, and we get to see things that people would not report about themselves. "Oh, I'm happy to meet you. Did you know I killed so-and-so?" We don't present ourselves that way. And we do have a reputation, what other people might be saying about us. I want to tell you something about one of the dear members of this church, Brother Clyde Lynn. One time when I was preaching here many, many years ago, there was a young man that, and you all know exactly who I'm talking about. I'm not going to mention his name, but he was trying to be a good father to his little girl. And he brought her to church every single time the doors were open. And he had some rough spots in his life. But he wanted to do well by his daughter. And he was doing his very best. Well, there was a custody battle that ensued between he and his wife. And they were trying to each of them gain possession or complete custody of the child. And some of the members of the church here were asked to come and testify on his behalf. And I was one of them. And Brother Clyde Leon, I love how David puts it, Brother Two-Star, he was a two-star general in the Army. And what a beloved member of this church. And he never talked about any of that stuff, but decorated veteran, right? And Brother Clyde went up, and they called him to the stand, and he went up there, and the first thing he did was there was a picture right behind where he was going to sit, and it was crooked. And Brother Clyde walked up to it, and he straightened it out. And then he sat down. And I was thinking, wow, what was that all about? And the judge said, thank you, sir. And I think Brother Clyde was kind of saying, now let's get this straight. But he was asked a lot of questions about this young man and what kind of individual he was. And this is the way Brother Clyde Lynn always answered the judge. He appears to be a good father. He appears to love this little girl very much. Whereas Craig Hearn just got up there, he's a good man. And isn't that true? That your reputation is what maybe appear. I tell you, we take people wrong all the time. We can be so unfocused and inaccurate about what it is that we observe or even what we hear. The way someone looks at us. We may read all of that stuff completely wrong, and it happens all the time. I know it because I see it. I live it. And we have to be cautious. And I love to use this phrase. We just need to give them the benefit of the doubt. We have no idea what has been going on. I just picked up a book the other day. I mean, we have Brother Troy, that was a beautiful prayer. I appreciate all of your thoughts in that prayer. And it is true, we're about to have inauguration tomorrow. But I just picked up this book that is written by J.D. Vance, who is about to be sworn in as our new vice president. And man, oh man, Hillbilly Elegy. And I've looked at this, you know, sharp dress. This man presents so well. But now I know what he actually experienced. He never knew. He was always looking for someone to be attached himself to as his father. But his mother went from here to there to yonder, and his life was just completely chaotic. He said I read last night, he ran into his teacher, who just because of him acting out because of what was going on in his life at home, and really the only lighthouse in his life was his mamaw, his grandmother, and his papaw, his grandfather. And they saved him. They saved him from everything else that was going on in his life. But he said his kindergarten or second grade teacher ran into him years later and said, I was on the verge of quitting teaching solely because of you. I can say that about a few kids. But here's the vice president, the future vice president of the United States of America, graduated from, Yale? A lawyer? Wrote this book with all these big words and just excellent observations? And he almost caused a primary school teacher, Dora, to get out, just quit teaching. Ah, this is not for me. And that teacher had no clue what was going on in that young man's life. He had no stability. He had no guidance whatsoever. And he and his sister were raising themselves with a little bit of help from grandma and grandpa. You just don't know. But you have a reputation. Then there's the most important thing, is where we'll close this morning. And that is That's what God has to say about us. And what God says about us, as He said about all those kings, this is what I want to call validation. This is not going to be photoshopped. It's not going to be embellished, exaggerated. It's not going to be hyperbole. It's going to be, as we say, straight from the hip, buddy. This is getting it straight from, as we say, the horse's mouth. Whatever it is that God has to say about us, this is the true story. What we hear from God is not hearsay. It is impartial truth. It's not based upon what I'm hoping for you. It's not embellished. Boy, I spelled that wrong. Not Photoshop, whatever that is. The Bible does indeed give us the good, the bad, and the downright ugly of human behavior. Boy, there's some of those stories. Wouldn't it be embarrassing for them to come back and, "You wrote that about me, God? I didn't want anybody to know that about me." Uncensored and right out in the open. This morning I want to, as we close, ask you that each of us use caution in the way that we present ourselves. That we're honest about ourselves. Aren't we pretty good about that? Aren't we pretty open and candid about, "Hey, I'm a sinner. Hey, I'm broken." David came months ago, last year, spoke for us, and in the introductory remarks he said something like this. He said, "You know, I may be presenting myself in this. You may be seeing me up here in the pulpit, and it looks like I've got everything. I'm on top of everything, and I've got all of the boxes checked," he said. "But really, behind that is another story." And I appreciate his candor and his honesty. And we also need to be sure that we're presenting ourselves as who we are. We're thankful, aren't we? We're grateful people. We're humble people because we know that we're broken. We know that we've sinned. We know that we've done and said and even thought about things that we should never have done. And we've embarrassed ourselves. We've embarrassed our parents. We've brought reproach upon God's people. We probably call someone and say, "Can you believe that guy's a Christian?" And sometimes people get it wrong. They got me and Jay wrong one time. They got Jay and I wrong. Yeah, we were Carol and Kim, and we were having us a good time at the Down East Jamboree over here, and they were doing Jerry Clower, and Jay was doing the, and I was doing the, "Oh!" And then they had an intermission, and we walked out, and Kim and Carol were there, and two little old ladies were in the back, and they said, "Do you know who that was?" And she leaned over and says, "No, who was that?" She said, "That was Jay Connor." "That was Jay Connor? Is he drunk?" They got us wrong, didn't they, Jay? We were just having a good time. That was all it was. God knows. God knows who we are and what we're up to and what we're thinking. And our reputation suffers many times because people, they think they see something that they don't see. We can't help that. We can help what it is that we're saying about ourselves. We need to be careful with that. But I hope each and every one of us will leave this morning thinking about the most important thing. Kim and I have been here on a couple Sunday nights, and you've been working on this song, and you probably got it down beautiful, as you have all the other songs. "Well done, well done." Boy, to hear God talking about validation. I know how much I've messed up. I know myself. And I hope that I'm presenting myself in that way this morning. You know, yeah, there's the Craig Hearn you see up here, but God knows Craig Hearn. God knows what Craig Hearn has done throughout his life. He knows the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? But if I could just hear God say, "Well done." And if God could follow up with saying, "You've been faithful over a few things." Not "You've been faithful over everything." "You've been faithful over a few things. I'm going to make you ruler over many things." I don't care about being ruler. I just hope that God could say about me that I've I've actually been reliable with a few things. How about you? What really counts, right, is what God has to say about us and to us in the end. And I hope we'll all live with that in mind. You're here this morning, and you're not a child of God. You know what? It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't even matter what people have said about you or are saying about you right now. What really matters is what God might say about you in the end. You know what God wants to say? Come in. Welcome. Welcome. He wants to forgive you. He wants you to be His child. That's what God wants. That's what God wants to say. Welcome, my son. Welcome, my daughter. Are you His child? Do something about it if you're not. Right now, let's stand and sing.